sure how I got the honor, but here I am. Denise, thank you. As I tell a lot of the guys I work with, and I truly believe if I just get myself here, God will take over, and that's what I hope happens this morning. And, you know, maybe hopefully someone can relate, and hopefully it'll give someone some hope. I know we got some birthdays, but I'm going to just get started, and we'll see what happens here today. My name is Drew Dixon. I was born November 10th, 1970. My parents, I have two just unbelievable parents. My dad, he's from North Carolina, born and raised on a tobacco farm. You know, just bare essentials. He was drafted, went to Vietnam, served two tours, and, you know, he just doesn't speak of it. We don't communicate great. There's no, you know, I don't know any of his stories. He doesn't want to tell them, and that's, you know, that's his thing. My mom, on the other hand, she is, you know, I still get Santa presents from my mother. I got a nice stocking, so I get my craziness legitimately. She would do anything for me. Used to come to the school and help me cheat on tests because I couldn't pass it. But, you know, either of them did and will do anything that would help me. And, you know, maybe to some of my detriment, got me out of a lot of trouble I probably should have faced. And it may have had me grow up a little bit quicker than, you know, at 42 years old, figuring out I'm a man. But, you know, that's my parents. I have a younger sister. She's 4 years younger. And to say I'm the black sheep would be quite the understatement. She doesn't drink. She'll have a glass of wine, special holidays, and, you know, got married a virgin, dated three people before she was married. Ryan Seacrest used to go on vacations. They dated in high school. And, you know, now she's married to a guy that, without him, I wouldn't be here today. And it's amazing where you find the strength at. And it wasn't from my family, it's from my brother-in-law. 2 years before I got sober, he had a brother go through some difficulties and go into the program. And so he kind of knew a little bit about it, and, you know, he walked me through all this. I still, you know, cherish our friendship. And today, you know, it's pretty neat that I get to sit down and share with them and be a family. I never was part of the family. I worked for my dad, grew up working for him. Well, he fired me twice, but, you know, I'm back in there now, and, you know, it's more of a, more of an employee and, employer relationship. You know, he's told me he loves me. I can remember twice ever. But I know he loves me. I know it. He shows it, but he's just not the, he doesn't, you know, he's from the back streets, was in a gang growing up, and just doesn't communicate that. And it, you know, I try to be more communicative, but, you know, I still have it in me where I won't be. Growing up, I was extremely shy, did not want to be pointed out for any reason. Would just cry. If, you know, I can remember, you know, if I just thought I didn't know where my parents were, I would just start bawling and just running around like I was, my feet were on fire. And I was just so insecure and scared. And fear plays a huge part throughout my story, and I can still let it get me some today, but today I have a choice in the matter. Growing up, you know, it's all I saw, and, you know, and my parents, their best thing would be, it's okay, you don't need to feel that way, you're okay, you're fine. And so I would just push it in, and okay, well, just gut it out. And, you know, it messed with me some mentally, but, you know, here I am. So what? I always had my feelings get hurt. And then when I was 12 years old, we were on a cruise, and I had my first drink. And I'll never forget, it was me and my dad walking around, and I'd never seen my dad drink, but we walked into a bar, and he ordered a whiskey sour, and I remember, ooh, whiskey sour, that sounds neat. And he said, here, you want a sip? And I said, oh, well, yeah. And I just, bump, down. And right then, I felt that feeling. Just everything, whew, wow. My, you know, it's indescribable. You know, because you felt it, that, you know, ease and comfort that comes. And, you know, it didn't hit me then how much it meant to me, but, you know, late, the next day on the cruise, they let me go on a little expedition of snorkeling. And the guide said, well, anybody want Bahama Mamas as we head out? And so I drank three of them. And I'm 12. I got back drunk. And it was the best day of my life. Went and played bingo and just had a ball. And knew right then at 12, that's where I get my ease and comfort. I wasn't panicking. You know, they left me in the bingo, and I was okay being alone. And I'd never felt these things that alcohol had given me at such an early age. And so as time went on, you know, it wasn't until 15 or 16, I started drinking regularly, every weekend and whenever I could get out of the house, you know, go on trips, anything to get that alcohol in me. My dad traveled a ton growing up, and so it was me and three buddies, and we were the four, we inseparable, and grew up, we were raised on the movies Porky's and Hollywood Nights, and emulated those, every prank that they had pulled, we tried, and, you know, came down to just doing horrible things. You know, I shouldn't say this in a church, going to the church Valentine's party and spiking the punch, not with liquor, but other things, and just thinking that was hilarious, look at them. And, you know, by age 17, I was, you know, an alcoholic looking back. I got arrested at age 17 at Six Flags. We'd been drinking in the parking lot and going there, and I had to use the restroom while on the sky buckets. Well, I couldn't wait. And so, you know, you can't be doing that. And so I get off Skyway and they arrest me for urinating in public and underage drinking and haul me to the little local jailhouse there at Six Flags. And, you know, I had to go, I remember having to write out a story. And just write about my life and why I was drinking at age 17. And I don't know why they made me do that, but I remember having to do that and giving that to the police. And then when I showed up for court, it was me and my three buddies again. And theirs all got dismissed. And she looked at me and said, I would recommend you some alcohol treatment. whatever. And my dad, you know, oh, he's fine, he's fine. And so we just moved on from it. But looking back, she saw something in me that was there and just I didn't want to admit to or wasn't going to show anyone else. High school was real hard for me. Classes, I later discovered I'm dyslexic. But my parents never would take, I was failing all math classes and English, and they would just say, well, you're not trying hard enough. Let's get tutors. So I'd go to tutors all during the week and still couldn't pass my algebra. That's when my mom would come in and help me cheat on the test, just to get me through it. And I never did pass algebra in high school. Not sure how I graduated. Went to a private school, Greater Atlanta Christian, over in Norcross. My parents thought, well, let's get him in a private school where it'll be better influences. Well, that's where I learned about drugs and getting drunk during school. You know, I went to take the SAT. I made a 750 on the SAT, and that was my best score out of three times. And somehow got into Georgia Southern. And all through this time, I still had this inadequacy feeling and just a huge fear of being rejected. I never asked women out on dates. They would either have to ask me or we'd be set up. And, you know, I look back and I miss so many wonderful opportunities and, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but I was so scared of failure. I wouldn't try anything. I wouldn't compete. I made the baseball team, but quit because I just didn't want to lose out my position. I thought it'd be easier to quit than lose my position. I didn't want to get in competitions just for the mere fact I didn't want to lose. And so I would drink and drink and drink and then go to Georgia Southern, and that just escalated the situation. I was there for 2.5 years. I left with 9 hours of credit. So school was not my priority. I got into doing drugs, dealing drugs. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on drugs. That's not why we're here. But it is part of my life and part of my story. But so I'm at Georgia Southern, and I'm failing. My parents are saying, you know, they weren't paying for it, so they couldn't tell me to come home. I had worked odd jobs growing up, enough to pay for college, and so I'm there and drinking daily. You know, they had all these great little nights of penny beer night. Bust your bladder. It's free drinks till someone uses a restroom. Ladies night where and people would use a restroom, just not go to the restroom. It was when someone went to the restroom that all drinks were cut off. You know, and the ladies night where ladies getting free drinking bottles of champagne and we're all outside till 9 and they let us in and it's just mass chaos. And you know, it really got out of control. I got a DUI, my first DUI in 1991 down at Georgia Southern. I was heading home from a party and got my truck stuck in a ditch and just shut the door and started walking. And police pull up and take me to jail. Then my dad, you know, of course, came to my rescue. He knew a prominent person at Georgia Southern who he contacted and was friends with a judge. And my penance was $500, and I had to take the judge to lunch. And that was all that I suffered. And so that sure didn't help it. So I come back from Georgia Southern, and I start work for my dad, and I get fired for just not doing anything, not showing up. If I showed up, I was drunk. And so I decided I'd get a job bartending. I worked in Buckhead back when Buckhead was just out of hand. I was a bouncer, a bartender at a couple establishments down there, and just was a terror. I got down to 180 pounds, just very unhealthy, bleeding from all orifices. But, you know, it never slowed me down. The 90s and early 2000s are really a blur for me. I don't remember. I know kind of the places I lived, but when I lived there, I couldn't tell you. I lived in Buckhead for a couple years. Moved around with friends. And then in 94, let's see, I went to work, back to work for my dad when he started this new company. I wasn't really working, but in 95, I got another DUI. This was on the way to World Series game, get arrested. I come to, I'm in the basement of Grady Hospital, handcuffed to a gurney. And that, you know, that didn't slow me down. I had an underage kid with me who got him arrested. I met my wife around 96, 97. She worked in an office downstairs from ours, and a fellow employee said, well, look, let's all go to lunch, and Stephanie's coming, and blah, blah, blah. And then come to find out it was just to set us up. So we start dating, and, you know, I'm drinking every day at this point. We got married in 02. She was a partier also. She enjoyed drinking, the drugs. And we had a ball. We had a ball. Traveling, just going nuts. In 04, my first son was born, Austin, and we were at the hospital. And, you know, it was a bad labor. And he comes out and he's blue and he's not breathing. And all I hear is Code Blue Stat, and they're over there working on him. And I'm drunk, of course. And they get him back to breathing and take him off. And, you know, it's just me and my wife there. And, you know, the best thing I could do is I left and went to the bar. You know, left my wife and kid at the hospital. And didn't show back up till the next afternoon. And that's just the kind of drunk I was. Don't care. When that happened, when my wife got pregnant, she quit everything. And so it was just me. And that started some harsh resentments. And, you know, I think I'd been kicked out of the house at least once by then. And that sure didn't help matters when I did pull that move. You know, the doctors and all were even commenting on the alcohol on my breath, I remember. You know, and I tried to turn everyone around me into alcoholics. I wanted everyone to drink like I did. I felt I could hide in amongst them. I got two sons. I have a younger one. He was born in 08. He had another real long labor, but, he came out breathing. But once again, you know, after that excitement, I had to leave, and I left again. Even after knowing what I did the first time. So I did come back that night later in a drunken stupor and pass out in my wife's room to be wakened by her parents. I never wanted any responsibilities. You know, I just wanted to be me and just leave me alone. I never thought I was hurting anyone but myself. That's the selfishness in me. And so we move along, and, you know, my wife has kicked me out several times. And 4th of July 2010, I always threw big parties. My parents have a lake house, and I threw a hell of a 4th of July party that would last a week with alcohol, drugs, just pure chaos. And it got to a point in 2010 where alcohol just wasn't working. You know, I would have my water bottle full of either vodka or moonshine if I was up there. And I would, you know, regularly drink a case of beer and have my other liquor drinks, but always had that water bottle full of liquor. It just could not get that feeling I had when I was 12 years old that everything was going to be all right. It was gone by then. And I was so scared. I come back from that 2010, the 4th of July trip. I get home, and, you know, not 10 years before I was 180 pounds. Now I'm 280. And my pancreas is out just huge. And I go to my doctor, and they send me to the ER, and I got pancreatitis. And the doctor's telling me, if I drink again, you're going to die. And unfortunately, my wife heard that. She was in the room, and they gave me all this paperwork, and I was trying to crumble it up because I knew I wasn't done. I knew it. And so I was in the hospital. She had left, went back home. When I got out, I stopped to get me a six-pack of beer. And I went to try to drink it, and I couldn't drink it. It just, the pain hurt so bad. So I went back, and they had put me on a ton of painkillers and potassium for my pancreas. And so at this time, you know, we're real busy at work, and I'm an auctioneer. And I traveled all over to do auctions. And we have one coming up after this, 1st of August, 2010, in Lake Tahoe. And so I made it 3 weeks. Oh, well, that was a funny story. The morning after I'd been released from the hospital, they were saying, you've got to go to treatment. You've got to get in a rehab. You got to do something. And so I'd noticed on my way to work, I'd seen this sign, rehab. And, you know, I'm nuts. So that day I pulled in there, and I'm going in just a ball of nerves and got to have some relief, all painkillered up and just bawling. And I go in, and there's this lady sitting there, and I just sit down and just go into, I got to quit drinking, I can't stop, and just go on and on for no telling how long. And then I stop at a point and just kind of look around, and she's just looking at me. And come to find out it was physical therapy rehab. And but God bless her. She said, just sit here. And I'm going, oh, my God. And people are looking at me just with their jaws down. But she Googled I don't know if she Googled. She looked up somehow, maybe in the phone book. I don't know back then. But she said, well, there's this place called the Howe Place up in Woodstock, and you need to go there. And so I found it, finally. And I went in, and God bless those people at Sober at Six, because I would go in, and I'd just stand up. Oh, thank y'all for being here and loving me. And, you know, and they would just hug me. Oh, you're going to be all right. And I only remember two people from back then. One of them I've seen since and one I can't find. But, you know, I was crazy. But getting back to, so I get to Lake Tahoe, and this is 1st of August, and I'm out of painkillers. And I distinctively remember I'm walking. We have the auction the next day. We get out there a day early. I'm in the hotel, casino, and I'm walking through. And, you know, I'm not a big gambler, but I'm bored. I said, well, let me just go sit up here and play some quarter slots or something. And then the little lady comes by and said, would you like a drink? I said, well, yeah, I would. And make it a Coors Light and a Mind Eraser, and I go into how I like it made. I like a big pint glass with a big thing of Kahlua, vanilla vodka, and a splash of soda, and two straws. I drink it through straws. And that came to me, and I got it down, and it didn't hurt. And boy, that right then, right after I drank those and knew and didn't feel the pain that I had, I think I knew that, you know, here comes hell, because I can't control it. And for 2 years, that's what it was for me. I would drink every day, but I would cry as I drank because I didn't want to, but I didn't know how not to. You know, I'd gone to those meetings a couple times. I don't remember what was said. I never got a big book. Never got a sponsor. Didn't even know what those were. I just didn't know. But I drank for 2 years, crying daily. My wife kicking me out, me talking my way back in. And then it came down to, in 2012, took my wife. We went down to Miami to celebrate our anniversary. I had a bunch of hotel points, and we stay in this nice hotel right at South Beach, on the beach. And, you know, if I say I saw her an hour a day, that's probably exaggerating. And that was it for her. That was it. We'd go out, you know, to the beach. I said, I'll be right back. And I'd be gone for the day, going to find me the dive bar. I wanted a dirty dive bar. I didn't want all the glitz. I want where I could have a chance to be cut. and that's what I looked for. I didn't mind. Death didn't scare me. But we get back from that, and she sent out an email. My whole entire family, saying she was done, that I'm a liar, I can't quit drinking, and I hide it well. I'd hidden it from my parents. I'd drink in front of them, but they wouldn't see those other drinks I had stashed. And I'd always have, if we ate at a restaurant, I always had a tab at the bar where every time you see me get up, go to the bathroom, you have a shot on the bar. And so that she sends out a family email to the family saying she's done. And so my mom calls for us all to meet in her basement. And this is a Saturday night, June 24th or 23rd. And so we all gather, and my wife starts off saying, I don't support him. I'm done with him. He can't stop drinking. All he does is lie. I don't want my kids around him. They're scared of him. And all true, all true. My dad gets up, he walks out, he's done with it. My mom just breaks down, and she can't even comprehend it. But my brother-in-law, he goes, "You're okay." And then it was just me and him down there. I don't remember really what all I said. I just remember crying. And that's a bit, I'm a crier. But I just remember sitting there and everything. I said, "I don't want to live like this anymore." And right then, when I said that, I kind of felt everything just kind of go out. A big weight lifted. And my brother-in-law goes, "Well, look, you come to my house tomorrow. First thing I want you to do, go to the church." And we were going to North Point over there, Andy Stanley. And so he made a call to the church and lined up where I was meeting two people there Sunday morning. So I go in, meet with these folks, and they pray over me. And, I felt fine. But then I head over to my brother-in-law's, and he starts doing the research and looks up rehabs. And, you know, I'm pushing for the, well, maybe the outpatient. And he goes, "No, this is, you're going in." And by that time, I just said, "Okay, whatever." I was just tired, so tired. And so he lined up where I was to go to Ridgeview. Monday morning, I showed up at Ridgeview at 8 a.m. He was right there by my side. And then sat till 5 o'clock. And I think they do that just to see who really wants it. But you couldn't drag me out of there. I was just so scared to go back to the life I had. I wasn't looking to, this time I wasn't looking to get better for Stephanie and the kids. I just wanted to survive and not have to drink every day. And so they let me in Ridgeview, and that's where the miracles started to happen. I suddenly noticed that I didn't have the compulsion. And, I had a great counselor in there, Handy Moore, so I'll never forget him. He would pull me to the side and give me little things to research and, because I was hungry for it, man. I was desperate and I was whipped. And I love to see newcomers come in that are just in pain, beat up, and whipped, because you got a chance then. And that's where I found myself. And he showed me a few simple things. He knew I'd grown up in church and a believer. And he said, we're talking one day about prayer. He goes, "Have you read? You need to go read Job 42:10. I said, "What? I don't even know where that is." But I look at it and it's telling Job, pray for others. That's how you'll be blessed. You don't pray for yourself, you pray for others. And that was just such a new thing for me. So I started doing that. And I prayed with prayers of the dying, man. I was so scared of going back to how it was. I went over and beyond everything they asked of me to do. I met with counselors. I did all the little sheets. And they had towards the end of my stay, I was there about 45 days. And at first they put you down in the detox. And they had us mixed. I'm there with the underage psychotics, and we're just looking at each other, don't know which way to spin, and just but I make it through and get up to the halfway house, and all I can remember, I was telling the folks, just get me to the halfway house. I got to figure out how to live. And so finally get up there, and I'm in my little apartment. I've got my good buddy in one room, and we got to be good friends. My wife would come up. She came one time. They asked for a couple's therapy, and the only thing she could say is, I don't want him home. He doesn't belong there. And I simply said, you're right. You're exactly right, and I'm not going to argue any with you. And that's how I felt. I didn't know where I was going to go. I didn't care. I just was so tired. So I get out, and I go to my parents' house and spend a night or two. And while I'm in treatment, they say you get a temporary sponsor. And so I'd gotten on the phone sheet. I start calling, and I can't find anyone. And a guy taps me on the shoulder and says, you looking for a sponsor? I said, yeah. He said, well, you got one now. And it ends up this kid's 10 years younger, totally blind, have nothing in common, but we don't want to drink. And I would go see him daily, weekly, one day a week, and he walked me through the steps. And he did it by the book. It wasn't, here's what I think step one's about. We read out of the book. And that's the way I do it today with the folks that ask me to take them through the steps. I don't know what's good for me or how to get anyone sober. I couldn't get myself sober. But he took me through the steps, and I remember in the fourth step, actually putting myself in other people's shoes. That had never crossed my mind, you know, how other people are affected by me. I thought I was the victim forever. And so I get out of Ridgeview, and I'm starting to go to meetings. I'm going to a bunch of different ones, and I go turn up at the Howe place. And I'm about 4 or 5 months sober, and I got to talking to someone. I think it was Charlie overheard me. I said something about how, I love to cook. He goes, well, I need you to meet here Wednesday night at 6 o'clock. I'm going, well, whatever. I ain't got nothing else to do. So I show up, and it's a board meeting of the Howe place. Charlie goes, well, this guy can cook. He'll do our anniversary dinner. Okay. And I found myself, now I'm on the Howe Place board for 4 years. And thank God for that, Charlie. I have to be accountable. I was intergroup rep at my home group, which is a breakfast club at Howe Place, meets Monday through Saturday, 8 a.m. And I was intergroup rep at about 6 months sober and have moved through doing service work in that. Now I'm following Denise. She has taught me so much. I'm our GSR this year. And so I'll be reporting to Miss Denise, and I'm looking forward to that. I'm blessed today, and that, guys, for some reason, I've had some people ask me to take them through the steps, and that's where this program really comes to life for me, to sit across from someone and to see that light go off. Although, out of nothing I've done, but just sitting and listening. And that was tough for me to do, to listen. I got a sponsee here today. And that word sponsee has always been in my crawl because really I'm just a tour guide. I'm just showing you what I've done. I'm not responsible. And that word sponsor makes me feel like I may have to be responsible for you. I can't do that. But I will show you everything I've done. And, I was telling him, he's sharing his story, first Saturday of January. And I was telling him, man, I'm all freaked out about this thing. He goes, well, do what you told me. You're just introducing yourself to these folks. You know yourself. I said, well, thank you. And so I learned more from my sponsees than they could ever learn from me. Today I'm free. I'm free. The Christmas before I got sober, I was in the front yard trying to put together a gosh darn basketball goal that I'd put in wrong, couldn't undo it, bawling my eyes out, my wife screaming, you have ruined Christmas! And it's 2 a.m, and today, a couple days ago, I'm with my kids, and they're hugging me. My oldest, he had some separation issues. He's not a big fan when Daddy leaves. It took a while for him to understand that Daddy comes home now. I never, you know, back when I was drinking, I never saw my kids get up in the morning. I never saw them go to bed. You know, I'm blessed today. I get to wake my kids up, feed them breakfast, get them on the bus, put them to bed. I'm a member of the family. That head of the household that I thought I had to be, no, that's not where it's at. You know, I'm a member of this house. Attraction rather than promotion. I don't argue anymore. Oh, it pisses my wife off. You know, that those arguments that used to be, now it's, you may be right. And, oh, you tell your wife, you may be right, when she knows she's not. Oh, there's nothing finer in the world. Because 30 minutes later, she's going to come and say, you know, I was crazy. And that's how life is today. You know, for me, it's about just be cool, man. I want to react properly to life. I don't want to just, the quick reaction. And the St. Francis prayer, huge part of my life, because it tells me how to respond correctly. You know, how to walk into situations I'm not familiar with love, tolerance, and patience. How to seek to understand and to be understood. A couple more things and I'll shut up. My wife, who, to say it was a tumultuous relationship, has come so far. She has made some books for me, and I'd be happy to show them to you if you'd like. You know, she surprised me with these books. My first year of sobriety. You know, I celebrated my 1 year, and she gave me this book, man, and it just blew me away. I didn't know that she was recording my first year of sobriety. And then she gave me one for my 6 years that I celebrated this year. And, you know, the blessings, they're there. I just had my head down. I couldn't see them. Now I can walk with my head held high, and they just hit me right in the head. You know, if I'm willing to open my eyes and accept them. I have a choice today. And thanks to those of you in this room and my home group, I know how to live. So I appreciate you letting me speak today. I hope maybe someone got something that may have touched them. If not, come ask me after the meeting. Shoot some questions. I know. Now, I've always been told there's what you plan on saying, what you say, and what you wish you had said. It's that boat again today. But thank y'all for letting me come and share a little bit of my story. And God bless you all. Thank you.